Yad Yisrael, Omrim Shema Yisrael.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Leave a Little to God, was written by Joseph Mendel and is presented in observance of Lincoln's birthday.
A few names, some fragments of the story are known, and a question. Listen. If life hangs by a thread so thin a spider's breath might break it, how do you know the thread will hold? I ask the question and stop short of the answer. For shall I presume to instruct the world? Yet it may be that an answer is contained in the story itself. First, the sounds of battle. Bull Run, Antietam, Gettysburg, Chancellorsville. Remembered names of fields and woods, reddened impartially by North and South in final controversy. First, the guns. Afterward, the cries. The soft human sounds. Then silence. And another world.
Johnny! Johnny Rep! You with the gun up there in the stockade!
What do you want, Yankee?
Prisoners of war inhabit a dangling world, equally remote from the living and the dead. They've made a long journey through battlefields washed with blood. A journey from the White Mountains of New Hampshire, from the streets of New York, the farmlands of Ohio, to another field, strewn with tents and shelters dug into the earth and surrounded by guards and a wooden stockade. A Confederate prison camp.
What do you want, Yankee?
That tree branch out there, see? I'm going to get it.
You cross that dead line and I shoot.
Who said I was going to cross it?
You step over that line of rails, you're a dead man.
I'm just going to stretch out like this. Careful, like, and pull in the branch. Ah, got it. Thanks, Johnny. Mess wagon's coming through soon. Gotta build a fire.
What you gonna cook, a steak?
Cornmeal and black-eyed beans. You eating any better?
Maybe not, Yankee. At least I got me a pot to cook my supper in.
Well, I got us some firewood, Lieutenant Murray.
Well, that's good, Stegman. I'll start the beans cooking.
Yeah, and what? Mess kit's burned so full of holes it leaks water faster than you can pour into it.
Well, you know what to do. Hammer it out with a stone. Make a new shape.
That trick's used up, Lieutenant. There's not a square inch left without holes.
Well, then we'll have to eat raw beans.
Sure, we could do that, only don't get all the nourishment out of them that way.
Well, you've been a soldier long enough to know you eat what you have, cooked or raw.
Maybe that'll do for you and me, Lieutenant, but Captain Wilmot, he's pretty sick.
Don't worry about me. I'll be all right.
Sure, Captain, sure you will. But with the dysentery and the fever, he needs all the nourishment he can get.
What's that you said? What are you up to, Stegman?
Nothing at all, Captain. Just going to cook your supper. Well, Lieutenant Murray?
Well, what? Say what you mean.
You know what I mean, sir. It isn't as if we had any choice.
Are you two having a staff conference about cooking a few beans?
Well, I guess you're right, Stegman. There's no choice. I'll have to talk to Norton.
Mm.
Well, you came to the right man, Lieutenant.
How much, Norton?
That depends on what you want. Pot for cooking beef? Skillet for beans?
You know, it's been months since they gave us any meat.
Yeah, you're right at that, Lieutenant. I guess you want a saucepan for boiling parched corn, black-eyed beans. Here you are. Handmade by an expert out of a canteen. Heavy gauge. Solid.
How much, Norton?
Well, you're talking about Union silver? Confederate paper? Gold pieces?
You know what I'm talking about. Get on with it.
No money, hmm? Or maybe you'd like to rent the article in question. There's a small fee, of course. One handful out of every pot, corn or beans or whatever.
Let go of me.
You filthy vermin. You're making a profit out of hunger and sickness.
You can't choke the price down.
That's better, Lieutenant Murray.
What do you want for the saucepan?
What'll you give?
Well, if it were for me, Norton, I'd rather starve, but there's a sick man.
There's a lot of sick men here. Maybe half the camp and the other half stands a good chance of getting sick. And most of them are going to die. But I aim to stay alive. Now, you want the saucepan or not?
I want it.
Then I'll tell you what I'll take for it. A place like this, a man puts a bigger value on little things. Like being able to button his coat against the rain.
You enjoy this, don't you?
Strictly business. You got four brass buttons on your coat. I have a customer for them. What do you say? I'll tell you what. Show you I don't hold a grudge, Lieutenant. I'll throw in a couple of pins, in case it rains.
You're a fool. And the sergeant there's another.
Me, Captain Wilmot?
Both of you, Stegman. For wasting food that might keep you alive.
If he wasn't my superior officer, sir, I'd...
You'd what?
Tell you to shut up and eat your beans.
Are you in on this conspiracy too, Murray?
Conspiracy?
Giving me more than my share of the rations.
Well, if you don't keep your strength up, Wilmot... How do you expect to recover?
That's not necessary to humor me. I don't expect to recover. I'm gonna die.
That's no way to talk, Captain. You can't figure everything.
Some things are easy to figure, Stegman. If you're realistic.
Captain, nobody's more realistic than I am. That's why I say lots of things could happen. Maybe there'll be a general exchange of prisoners. Could be.
You believe that?
Why not? Could even be that the war will end next week. Or the day after tomorrow.
War becomes a being in itself, manipulating its makers. If it begins without the full consent and desire of either side, to end it, more than willingness is required. The day after tomorrow was the 2nd of February, 1865. On the Union transport River Queen, anchored in Hampton Roads, Virginia, within earshot of the guns besieging Petersburg, a mixed party assembled.
Mr. President, allow me to present the Vice President of the Confederate States of America.
I do not recognize the title, but I am happy to see an old friend. How are you, Stevens?
As well as can be expected, Mr. Lincoln. You?
You mustn't encourage me to complain. Let me tell you instead what came into mind as I watched you enter the cabin.
Of course, Mr. Lincoln.
There you were in that heavy coat down to your ankles.
But I'm not accustomed to the cold.
Off came the coat and underneath the woolen muffler. Muffler unwound, there was a shawl to be removed, and another shawl, and finally...
There you were. And I thought, never have I seen so small a nubbin come out of so much husk.
You always did have the advantage of me.
In size.
But not in sharpness of wit. I learned that when we were in Congress together.
That was many years ago. Tell me, have they finished building the Capitol?
It goes slowly, my friend. There are other more pressing matters, you know.
Yes. Mr. President, is there no way of putting an end to the present trouble?
I know of only one way.
And that is?
Let those who are resisting the laws of the Union cease that resistance.
Do you mean, Mr. Lincoln, that you will not sit down to negotiate on any other terms? If so, then many brave men have yet to forfeit their lives.
Stevens, I would sit down with the devil himself if even one man might live who would otherwise die.
Picks and shovels in the wagon. All right. Burial detail dismissed. Get up.
Nothing, Stegman. Not a stone or a marker to say John Wilmot, Captain, United States Army, born on a farm in Ohio, died in a Confederate prison camp. Nothing. No reminder.
There's many an unmarked grave that won't be forgotten, Lieutenant.
He was right. He knew what to expect.
Turned out that way, didn't it?
Well, what other way could it turn out?
What other way? That's how it seemed on a little round top hill at Gettysburg or crossing a stone bridge over Bull Run Creek. Same, we're here.
Well, all that's done with. How many reprieves does a man get?
Nobody's counting, Lieutenant.
Wilmot was right, and he wasn't talking only about himself. He meant that we're all going to rot here.
Maybe so, but I don't...
I'm not going to stay here to die. Stegman, did you notice how soft the earth was? How easy it was to dig?
If you're thinking the same thing I am, did you notice the patch of woods a little way beyond the stockade?
Listen, we'll move our shelter closer to the deadline. They don't have regular inspections in the camp.
They don't have to with a stockade 15 feet high.
We'll move and then start inside the shelter.
Work nights, rest during the day. How long do you estimate it has to be?
I'll say 20 feet from the deadline to the stockade, then 10 feet more beyond.
A 30-foot tunnel. Then into that patch of woods, and we're out. We're alive.
Lieutenant Murray, come on up. You've been working over half an hour.
I'm coming, Stegman.
Give me a hand up, will you?
Oh, the air is good.
I guess waving my shirt over the opening doesn't give much ventilation down there.
Yeah, not much, but it helps.
You all right now?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Then I'll go down for my shift.
No. No, look outside. It's getting light. We'd better get some rest now.
I can use a rest. How far are we?
Oh, about 6 feet, I'd say. 24 more to go. Well, the tunnel must be 15 feet, maybe more. Stegman, we're halfway out.
We're halfway to the other side of the stockade.
That's what I said.
Not exactly, Lieutenant. We're not out until they can't find us and bring us back again.
Well, it amounts to the same thing. Oh, we know what to do when we're on the other side. We've planned it in detail, haven't we?
That's right.
Well, then it's only a question of finishing the tunnel. And we'll finish it, Stegman, if we have to claw the earth out with our fingers. Well, don't you believe that?
It's not so much believing, Lieutenant, as counting on a sure thing.
Because if you don't believe it, then what's the sense of wearing ourselves out? Wasting the strength we ought to be saving. We might as well stop right now.
Now, wait, I didn't say that. It's just lots of things can happen. But one thing is sure.
If we don't keep digging, we'll never get to the other side of the stockade.
Well, let's get to work.
Okay, only it doesn't all depend on you and me. I mean, we don't have to do it all. Leave a little to God.
My turn now, Stegman.
The air hardly reaches to the end of the tunnel. Don't stay down too long.
I know. I'll be careful.
Another thing, Lieutenant. I talked to some of the Johnny Rebs yesterday, the guards who built the stockade.
What'd you find out?
The stockade poles go down 4 or 5 feet into the ground. Now we better start slanting the tunnel down.
All right. Here I go. Now
don't forget, not too long. Oh, you forgot the spoon. You didn't take the spoon to dig with.
Stegman, my God, the tunnel!
What is it, Lieutenant? What's the matter? Here, give me your hand. Tell me, what happened?
A cave-in, Stegman.
All of it? The whole tunnel?
All except the first 6 feet.
Oh.
Back where we started.
February 2nd, that's when we began. I marked the days.
Leave a little to God. Isn't that what you said, Stegman? All right, I'm willing. We've done our share. What's he been doing?
How do you measure the burden and allocate shares to man and God? The tunnel was started on February 2nd, the same day the two men sat at a table aboard the transport River Queen and talked far into the night.
Mr. Lincoln, you offer the Confederacy nothing else than surrender, unconditional submission.
Those are harsh words, Stevens. I did not say them.
If I found gentler ones, their meaning would be the same.
I intend no degradation or humiliation of the Southern people.
Certainly not you, Mr. Lincoln. But what does the Congress intend?
You know it is beyond my power to speak for Congress.
Then what assurances, what terms shall I take back with me?
I can give you none. There can be no bargaining with armed forces making war on the government.
Mr. Lincoln, while we talk here, the guns are silent, waiting. When I return, the shooting, the dying will resume.
Look into my eyes, Stevens. Don't you see there the same anguish that burns in yours?
I know it without looking. I'm reluctant to return, but there's no more to be said.
No. Stevens, there has been nothing we could do for our country. Is there anything I can do for you personally?
Nothing. Oh, yes, Mr. Lincoln. Perhaps you can send me my nephew, who's been a prisoner for more than a year.
I shall be glad to do it. Let me have his name and rank.
His lieutenant, Lieutenant Stevens.
And the name of the prison. Oh, here, write it for me. We will arrange freedom and the end of war, even if it is only for one man.
There is a harvest of days and their events, and you cannot say at once if they belong together or only happen to touch for an instant in moving apart. On February 2nd, one man's freedom was arranged, and others began to crawl toward freedom through solid earth. 3 weeks later, one man was free.
Good luck, Lieutenant Stevens. This pass will take you through our lines to your uncle in Richmond.
And 3 weeks later, others' hope of freedom collapsed.
So start again, Stegman, do you hear?
It's a digging, Lieutenant, and then a half-hour rest. We have to stick to that.
It's too slow.
You can't go faster on a handful of parched beans once a day. But we'll make it.
Stegman, the poles.
I touch easy, Lieutenant. Don't talk yet.
The tunnel has reached the stockade. We've almost finished.
Oh, man.
Sir Stegman, where are you?
Right here, Lieutenant.
All that hullabaloo outside woke me. What's the excitement about? Well, what is it, Stegman? Why don't you say something?
It's the Johnny Rebs. Squads of them, platoons.
Well, go on, go on.
Lieutenant, it only means delay, that's all.
Say it. In God's name, say what you mean.
They're building another stockade 25 feet outside the first one.
Oh, no. I say no.
It's going to take us longer than we thought, but we'll...
How long, Stegman? We can only work 5 minutes at a time now. How long? Until our hands no longer have the strength to hold the spoon for digging. Until we... I'm sorry, Stegman. Sure, we'll dig the extra 25 feet.
Something else, Lieutenant. The guards. They're probing the ground with long iron rods.
Oh, they'll find the tunnel.
Or maybe not.
What
maybe not.
Difference does it make now? I'm too weary even to curse. We can take a long rest now.
What's different now?
You don't see it? Do I have to tell you there's no more chance of getting out?
You don't know that. You can't know it.
You can if you're realistic. That's what Wilmot said, isn't it? Well, he was right. In this place, you mustn't expect to recover, to escape, to live. No, Stegman, there's no chance anymore.
All right, you're the realistic one, Lieutenant Murray. How much chance did the tunnel give us anyway?
Well, how do you expect me to answer that?
Oh, honestly, without fooling yourself, realistically.
Well, I thought it gave us a chance. That's why.
All right, then think of something else that will give you a chance.
What else? You tell me.
Shh. Listen.
Yankee, you there. I want a man by the name of Murray. Lieutenant Murray. Which way? Near the deadline, all right. Which one of you is Lieutenant Murray?
I am.
Come with me. Get up and get moving.
Where?
Prison commandant wants to see you.
You are here, Lieutenant Murray?
Well, no, sir.
Of course not. How could you know? Tell me, have you ever thought of the possibility of escaping from my prison? Well, Lieutenant?
Well, at one time or other, every prisoner thinks of it.
You're very cautious, sir. In the 2 years I have been commandant, do you know how many have actually escaped? Three. Exactly three. What do you think of that?
I have no opinion, sir.
Ah, but you should. I'm making the point that it's not easy to get out of this place.
I'm aware of it, sir, but...
But it has nothing to do with you? How do you know that? Never mind. Lieutenant?
5 weeks ago, a Confederate officer was released from a Union prison camp. That he is a person of some importance, the nephew of the Vice President of the Confederacy, that is of no significance when it comes to a question of honor. Any Southern gentleman would react the same way, no matter who it was. You understand?
Well, no, sir.
Look at that basket there on the table.
This one filled with paper scraps?
Not scraps, sir. Lottery slips, in a manner of speaking. Read a few.
Lieutenant Baxter. Lieutenant Bergman. Lieutenant Phillips.
The rank must be the same, of course. Honor is nothing, if not exact and punctilious. Now, don't bother to look, Lieutenant. The slip with your name is in my pocket.
My name? Why?
Why? Because it was picked at random from the basket. Think about it later on, sir. As I said, it is not easy to get out of my prison. Alive, that is. Yet, without lifting a finger, you have succeeded. Lieutenant Murray, you are a free man.
The story is told, and the question remains. If life hangs by a thread so thin, a spider's breath might break it, how do you know the thread will hold? If an answer is required, I answer only for myself. You don't know, but you must believe that it will hold. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting the Honorable Samuel H. Shapiro, Lieutenant Governor of the State of Illinois. Mr. Shapiro.
I feel pleased and privileged to share in the instructive and inspiring program which has just been presented. The deeper meanings of the experiences of the characters in this drama will be interpreted differently by its many listeners. It's not one, but many lessons will be learned differently by everyone who has ever witnessed or participated in war. But to all of us, this will stand out clearly, that in our developing spiritual history over the last 100 years, the name of Abraham Lincoln has meritedly been coupled with that of Moses. It is good that we recall this on the 152nd anniversary of the birth of the Emancipator and Legislator of Equality. It is good that we reconsider the ideals and aspirations that these two giants of the human spirit shared in feeling, accomplishing, and bequeathing to mankind. If I might be allowed to imagine a conversation between Lincoln aboard ship and prisoners Murray, Wilmot, and Stegman, I could hear Lincoln tell his soldiers in these his own words, "It is difficult to make a man miserable while he feels he is worthy of himself and claims kindred to the great God who made him. It is to encounter one of life's profoundest problems with understanding, courage, maturity, and dedication when we become able to say, 'Leave a little to God.' And to continue these words in our attitudes, most especially today, where arrogance and evil are spoken and practiced in so many vital areas of human concern on our planet. It was Lincoln's greatness that he defined authentic relationships and perceived the proper proportions in men and man's strivings. Now, let our final word be from those spoken by Lincoln himself, and I quote, 'Trusting in him who can go with me and remains with you, and be everywhere for good, let us confidently hope that all will yet be well.'"
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Shapiro. Our eternal light drama today, Leave a Little to God, was written by Joseph Mandel and was presented in observance of Lincoln's birthday. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Joseph Julian as Sergeant Stegman, Bill Martell as Lieutenant Murray, Jim Bowles as Abe Lincoln, and Louis Van Ruten as Vice President Stevens. Others in the cast were Mandel Kramer and James Monks. Our narrator was Walter Arnold. This is Vic Robey. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.